T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Live from the Investors Bank Studio, Boomer Esiason and Greg Giannotti, Boomer and Gio on the Fan and simulcast across the country on CBS Sports Network. Good Monday morning after a wild card weekend in the NFL that had some decent action, some defense for the first time that we've seen in a long time, at least in this NFL season. And a game that ended with not one, but two boinks off of the crossbar. And the Philadelphia Eagles and Nick Foles continue the magic into this postseason. How far will it go? It might end in New Orleans next weekend. But for the Eagles fans, they don't care. They're still basking in the glow of this one yesterday. And Cody Parkey, even though that ball was tipped, there was fingertips on that football. Cody Parkey's got to be sick today and probably for several months till he gets a chance to kick again. Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
You know what? I'm doing great, man. I love the football that we saw this weekend. And, you know, that was a compelling finish in Chicago. It was awesome. And Nick Foles is like, man, Jesus, he's going to make a decision in Philadelphia. Very, very difficult, especially if they go on the road and win in New Orleans this weekend. All I can tell you is game's on the line. It's fourth down, sprint right, Z out. They may call it something different. That's what we used to call it back in the day with the West Coast offense. It's a pretty easy play. And Golden Tate's route was unbelievable because he went up. He took one step. He hesitated a little bit. Looked like he was going to go inside and then jump to the outside. And his timing was impeccable because as soon as he turned around, Nick Foles had thrown the ball there, and he got away from Williams, the defensive back, ever so slightly. I mean, they knew the play was coming, and even when you know the play is coming, in order to stop it, you got to be really, really good, really fast, and a good change of direction guy. And the way that Golden Tate ran that play, it was beautiful, and that's how you draw it up. You know, they run that play the first day of practice. That is like a staple play in the West Coast offense. And I'm sure Matt Nagy knew it on the other side. I'm sure that Vic Fangio knew it on the other side that they were going to run it. And, you know, that's a play right there that tells you how important Nick Foles is. Because no matter the fact that he threw two interceptions in the first half, it didn't matter. All it mattered is when the game came down to it, who was going to make the play. And Nick Foles made the play, and Golden Tate ran a great route, but the throw has got to be there. It's on fourth down. He's not throwing it at his feet. He's not throwing it behind him. He's throwing it where he can get it away from the defender. And that's what you call a money play. And why Philadelphia, if they go on and win in New Orleans this week, man, I don't know what the hell the Eagles are going to do.
Yeah, that's a very, very tall task, of course. But at this point, you can't count them out of any game anywhere. And the Golden Tate part of that is really interesting, too, because this is a guy, they go and they make the trade at the trade deadline this year. You just don't see him being a big contributor as games go by. And then in this game, against the league's toughest defense, he's making the biggest play, along with Nick Foles, on fourth down to get the lead. And, of course, the Bears have an opportunity at the end of the game. It's a kick that should have been made, a very makeable kick, and that's the way the thing ends. But I mean, I thought that the Bears were going to roll in this game. I really thought that it was not going to happen again. I thought all the stars were aligned for the Philadelphia Eagles last year, and to duplicate that and recreate that even on wild card weekend as a road team was going to be very, very difficult. But I mean, at this point, you can never count that team out. You can never underestimate what they can do, because they went into Chicago against the league's best defense and did this on the road. That place, Urlacher and Butkus are coming out before the game. They hadn't had a playoff game there in a long time, and they were able to silence all of that and win the game in the fourth quarter. Incredible.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jason Peters had a hell of a game. He basically totally outplayed Khalil Mack.
Yep.
And just shut him out, and it was awesome. It was an awesome game. It was an awesome finish. I feel bad for Cody Parkey. I really do, because he obviously has had a rash of these upright hittings throughout the season. And of course, NBC went back and showed you all of them. Like,
yeah,
man, what a just an awful season for him. And
if you're his quarterback, though, are you feeling bad for him?
You feel terrible for him. You really do. You know why? Because you've asked him to win games for you. You've asked him to hit big kicks for you. And you know, they usually come through, and sometimes they don't. And this ball was tipped a little bit. I don't know how.
The tip changes it for me. It does. Because if it's just a flat-out miss, then I'm a little more. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I feel bad. I understand what he's going through sucks.
I feel bad. I just can't.
I don't know. I mean, this is the NFL. You're out to make that kick. It's the playoffs. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I didn't feel bad for Blair Walsh when he did it to my team in a wild card weekend against the Seahawks. I don't feel bad for these guys. I'm sorry. Now, am I going to boo the hell out of them and send them horrible things on Twitter? No, I'm not going to do that because, you know, everybody makes mistakes. You didn't get the job done. You don't get nasty about it, but I mean, if I'm a Bears fan, I'm not shedding a tear for him, I'll tell you that much.
He wasn't the only guy I felt bad for. I felt bad for Lamar Jackson. I felt bad for Deshaun Watson. Those guys played awful.
Yeah, they were terrible. Terrible.
I mean, it was just like the amount of balls that were thrown into the ground, over somebody's head, thrown into the chest of the opposing team, that if a couple guys would have made a couple interceptions for the Colts and for yesterday the Chargers – those games would
have been like three fumbles in 8 minutes or something or whatever eight plays. I think three fumbles in eight plays, rather.
I felt like, you know, at halftime, I felt like, you know, if I'm John Harbaugh, I got to seriously consider getting him off the field because he just looked like he was out of the game. Like, mentally, he was out of the game. Like, they were all over him. And with the way that they were playing their defense, they were forcing, I believe, him to try to throw the football, and Marty Morningwig's trying to call plays, and balls are flying over people's heads and thrown at people's feet. And I mean, he was just all over the place.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I get it. He's a rookie quarterback. He's going to be fine. But yesterday he was awful. And I guess, okay, with 5 minutes to go, they score 14 points. And a lot of that is due to him running around and just throwing the ball and, you know, displacing the defense and getting away from us, and I want to give him credit for that.
I was shocked that he was able to make that happen in the end of that game, because you're right. I mean, that offense was so inept. They didn't know what to do when they couldn't run the ball. The L.A. Chargers had the perfect game plan to stop him running, and also Gus Edwards and Kenneth Dixon and whoever else they wanted to hand the ball off to. I could not believe that they put together any sort of offense in that fourth quarter.
The only reason is because he was running around all over the place, and eventually you're going to make plays sooner or later. Now, if the game would have ended 20-3 and we would have been here this morning, everybody would have been screaming and yelling at John Harbaugh for not putting in Joe Flacco.
Right.
But the fact that they scored two touchdowns, they got within a touchdown, and they had the ball at the end, you know, you could say to yourself, okay, you know, I can understand why he stuck with him. And I guess to some respect, I do respect the fact that John Harbaugh stayed with his quarterback that got him to where they were. So I do understand that level of commitment to your QB, but I just felt like I would give him one more series in the second half, and he came out and got sacked on successive plays.
Well, it seemed like to me, you know, they had made that decision to move on from Joe Flacco.
Oh,
that was
it, right?
And there was no going back. And they didn't want to complicate matters. It was more important to them to not bench the guy who was their future, regardless of how poorly he was playing, to have faith in him going forward. That was, you know, they're playing the long game with Lamar Jackson as well, because, you know, with Flacco, it's like, all right, we bring him back in this football game when we've already made the decision to move on from him. I mean, I don't know. It was tough, but you're right. I mean, the fact that he did what he did, Lamar Jackson, in that fourth quarter sort of quieted some of the critics, because they still had an opportunity to win the game 24-23 if he would have had a touchdown drive. Now he ends up fumbling again, you know, on that last drive as he gets stripped, because it was relentless, that Chargers defense.
Look,
all day.
He's got a long way to go as a starting quarterback, you know, and everybody knew that. Nobody ever expected him to play this year. Everybody thought that Joe Flacco was going to be the quarterback, and Lamar would be like this special weapon that they would use in different ways. And they did do that early on, just, I think, also to get Lamar familiar with what it's like to run an NFL huddle and all that other stuff. But, you know, at the end of the day, the question is, it's not even a question, because we all know that you can't play quarterback the way that they're asking him to play, because he will not make it physically. You know, Cam Newton didn't make it through the year. Andrew Luck lost a year of his career and almost lost all of his career for running like a lunatic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's not the way the NFL game is meant to be played. And And with the fumbles and the ball going through his hands and the ball being overthrown and guy and the ball high, that just tells me that, you know, he just did not have his stuff yesterday. He didn't have his fastball. He didn't have his best game. It happens to all sorts of athletes. But John Harbaugh, nonetheless, stayed with him. So now the interesting thing from a Jets fan's perspective is, what is the situation with John Harbaugh in Baltimore? Is he going to be available, and is he going to be pushing the envelope down there to the point where the Ravens have to seriously consider letting him go, most likely through or via a trade with another team?
Yeah, and I can't get a read on it because John Harbaugh, when asked about it yesterday after the game, goes, well, I want to be here if they want me here. Okay, well,
what does that mean?
Right, exactly. Does that mean if they want me here at their price or they want me here at my price,
or
right?
Or they want me here where I have a say in the 53-man roster,
right,
which is going to be very, very critical, and I'm going to tell you why. Because I believe that while there are reports out there that things went well with Mike McCarthy,
mm-hmm,
there was also a report from our show yesterday from Jason Lockenfohrer that things didn't go well and that he was not going to sign with the Jets and that the Jets are seriously considering Matt Rhule from Baylor. Now, Matt Rhule was also an NFL coach. He coached for on the Coughlin staff with the Giants. So, look, it's not like he doesn't know the NFL, doesn't know football. I'm sure he does. I don't necessarily know that that's going to make the Jet fan happy. And I don't
want to
in any way disparage a coach and his opportunity if the Jets afford him one. I'm just trying to think about, you know, what I think the Jet fan really wants and what the Jets desperately need right now. And the only thing that I would worry about is whether or not a coach like Coach McCarthy will come here without control of who is playing for him. Now, I'm not saying that he has to control the draft. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is that when it comes down to final cuts day, a guy like McCarthy or a guy like Harbaugh has got to have control of the 53-man roster. That's what they're going to want. And the question is Christopher Johnson going to give that to that coach, or is it going to stay on the desk of Mike Maccagnan and Heimendinger? So, and I would think that, you know, that's one of the sticking points right there about who is controlling the 53-man roster. Not so much who's controlling the draft. I mean, if I'm a coach and you're the scout and you're the general manager, go do the draft. Do what you think. We all know what we need. Now that we have the draft and we kind of collaborated together, hopefully, and we got the guys that we want, as the coach that has all the, you know, the history, the experience that you're paying for, I want to be able to control who the hell is going to be on my 53-man roster. I don't want you telling me
right
who's going to be on my,
especially a guy with
roster,
that experience. But I mean, to me, I guess the best situation is a healthy collaboration, right?
Yeah, but yes. But again, these are all like these little sticking points. Mm. That where people want to control their little fiefdoms.
Well, is he going to get that in Cleveland, though? Because John Dorsey has done an unbelievable job in 1 year acquiring talent.
I don't know. But I'm just saying that if you come here, I would think that if you are a head coach of that kind of stature,
yeah,
you're going to want that. And if you have a direct line and the way that the structure is set up here in New York, that means you should be able to get that and that the owner should give you that part of it in your contract.
Yeah, Mike McCarthy, here's the other factor we've said a million times, we'll probably say it another million times. Mike McCarthy does not have to rush to a job this year. He had a very odd ending there in Green Bay before the season ended. All this stuff about him and Aaron Rodgers was out there in the public. If he does not coach next year, Mike McCarthy gets $7 million. If he does not find that perfect situation, so if there's 90% of the stuff that he likes with the Jet job, but there's 10% that he doesn't, he's probably not going to take the job because of that 10%, because of the situation he's in.
Okay, all right. So there are two jobs that are perfect for Mike McCarthy: Cleveland and the Jets. The Jets may be the better job because he has a direct line to the ownership, which is probably not going to be the case in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So if he comes to the Jet job, he's got his young quarterback, he's got his third overall pick, he's got his $90 million in free agency, and if it requires giving him control of the 53-man roster, you don't have to give him control of the draft and all that other stuff, but control the 53-man roster, plus you're paying him, what, Pete Carroll just got $11 million a year. So McCarthy may come out of retirement 6 years, $60 million. It's hard to say no to that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, that's what the Jets are going to have to do, I think, to break a tie.
But that's why I believe the Jets job is one of the best jobs there is. Plus, if you're going to have that direct line to ownership, and, you know, this is Christopher Johnson's first foray into this, okay? And it's a big decision. And it's a decision that is monumental for so many different reasons for this franchise. You know, if that's what it takes to get a Mike McCarthy, then that's what it takes. And that's what I'm giving. I have to give it to him because he's the one that's going to bring instant credibility to my team. Now, I would also say that's exactly what I would give John Harbaugh. If I'm going to get John Harbaugh and I'm going to have to trade for him, then I'm going to have to give him what he wants to come here.
Yeah, I think you need to do whatever it takes at this point. I didn't love the idea of McCarthy at first. But then looking at the landscape of the coaches, if you're telling me that Mike McCarthy has some demands and you're the Jets at this point in your franchise, I think you got to meet all those demands.
So they're going to be meeting with, I mean, they may have met with Chris Richard yesterday. They may be meeting with this Matt Rhule from Baylor again, not again, but either today or yesterday. I'm not really sure. But the reason maybe why you hire those guys is because, you know, the guys that are leaking the names to Manish are the guys that want to protect what they have going for them here, too.
Mm, yeah.
You know, this is the thing that really honestly sucks about the whole thing, that Christopher decided, okay, we're going to keep
Mike Maccagnan,
and we're going to keep the structure the way that we had it. This way, we're going to try to bring in a coach that is going to have this kind of cachet and this kind of control, but the guys that are already there are going to be very protective of their jobs and protective of their future. Why? Because the people in their life are telling the same thing to them as people in the coaches' lives are telling them. Right. You got to control the 53. You got to control the 53. You got to control the 53. And I'm just like, you know, I don't know where this ends. I can only hope that if it's a Mike McCarthy or a John Harbaugh, that you give them the control of the roster of who is playing for them. Maybe they're not picking the players. Hopefully picking the players goes through scouting and the GM and the contracts go through all that side of it. And they collaborate on that because they know what they need here. But at the end of the day, a coach of that magnitude is going to want to have control of the roster. And Jason Lockenfor said yesterday that while meetings are fine and everything goes great, it doesn't look like he's going to be signing with the Jets. That's what he said.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.